there's really no shortage of things that people can do. And we're just really trying to remind people of that and not let ourselves or others just be overwhelmed by the chaos, because again, that's an intentional part of their strategy, and we can't let them get away with that, those who would seek to divide us or sow fear. We know how to get through this, and it's together, and that is what solidarity looks like, and that is what Vermont, a state of freedom and unity, that's what we are designed for.
Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. President Trump's gusher of executive orders upending government and targeting vulnerable people are spreading fear and anxiety. In just the last week, Trump has issued orders that would ban gender-affirming healthcare, effectively close the U.S. Agency for International Development, and threaten to close the Federal Department of Education, fire career federal prosecutors, freeze some $3 trillion in federal grants, end birthright citizenship, block people from seeking asylum, and construct detention centers for thousands of immigrants to be summarily held. A headline in today's New York Times proclaims, "Trump brazenly defies laws in escalating executive power grab." Yale historian Timothy Snyder is more direct. "Of course it's a coup," he proclaimed in his Substack. And this is just the third week of Trump's presidency. Resistance has steadily been building, especially on the legal front. More than 24 lawsuits have been filed by Democratic attorneys general, including Vermont Attorney General Charity Clark. Suits have also been filed by the American Civil Liberties Union and other groups, and a number of these lawsuits have succeeded in stopping or slowing Trump's more audacious moves. A federal judge blocked the attempt to end birthright citizenship, declaring that it was, quote, blatantly unconstitutional. James Lyle is executive director of the ACLU of Vermont, and full disclosure, I'm a board member of the ACLU of Vermont. Nationally, the ACLU has already sued the Trump administration to stop fast-track deportation and has sued over restrictions on trans youth health care, birthright citizenship, and asylum, to name a few. I began by asking James Lyle what concerns him most at this moment and what gives him hope.
I mean, right now we are kind of, as you said, trying to manage just the feeling of overwhelm and overload that people are experiencing. We're finding at the ACLU, we're hearing from so many Vermonters and from teachers, from other state workers, from community members, friends and neighbors. And so many people have questions. They're looking for information. They're looking to trusted sources. And they're just really deeply concerned, obviously, by the actions of the new administration over these past 2 weeks. And they want to know what they can do and what they can do to help. And so, you know, that's a lot to manage. But I think in that there's a lot of room for optimism and for hope. I think the fact that so many people want to help and are reaching out to figure out how to support their neighbors and their communities when they feel so threatened right now, that's incredibly powerful. And I think it's really important to keep that in mind, as difficult as it is, you know, in moments of uncertainty and fear and even chaos, it's that determination of everyday community members to support one another and to find a way forward that's just really powerful. And, you know, that is what solidarity looks like. And that's something that's in our collective control. And we can't lose sight of that, as difficult as it is right now.
I know that something that ACLU shares with people widely is a document and a webpage called Know Your Rights. I think it's helpful to start our conversation by talking about what are your rights that people should be aware of at this time, whether those people are undocumented or fully documented, but just give us an overview of that.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's something that the ACLU always works to do, is to get out good Know Your Rights information. And I think that is, you know, in this moment, it's another time It's just really important for everyone to know their rights, not just in the best of times, but especially now is a great time to brush up on that information. The ACLU and other groups publish that information, update it regularly. People absolutely should look to trusted messengers like the ACLU, like Planned Parenthood, like Migrant Justice, for good information, including Know Your Rights information. So people can go to our website and get a lot of that information translated into many languages, as well as videos and other tools for helping to explain what people can do. I think it's especially important right now. It's not the only issue that we're facing, but obviously there's a lot of fear and concern in immigrant communities. And so, it's important that all of us brush up on Know Your Rights with regards to ICE and Border Patrol. And
And
again, we
say
have
a
that.
little bit about what those rights are. If you are questioned or stopped by Border Patrol, I mean, there are rumors I am hearing swirling about ICE raids in various places, and I have not had time to sort out what's real and what's not, but it is certainly in the air. So what are your rights when stopped by ICE?
Well, among others, it's important for people to remember that with any law enforcement, they always have the right to remain silent, and that is often a good right to exercise. Remember that you do not have to speak with law enforcement. I think for all community members, whether they're members of the immigrant community or not, knowing that, for example, you don't have to let law enforcement, including ICE or Border Patrol, into a building without a judicial warrant. ICE sometimes shows up and demands entry or presents an administrative warrant. That is a warrant that's not signed by a judge. They, like other law enforcement, have to have a judicial warrant to gain entry. And that's something that educators and school administrators should be aware of. That's something that proprietors of private businesses should be aware of. Again, a lot of these things pertain to all law enforcement, not just immigration, but the right to remain silent, the right to expect and demand a warrant before allowing entry. Those are some pretty key, rights protections that we all have. And again, it's an important moment to brush up on those, and we have those materials on our website.
What is an administrative warrant, and how you're saying it doesn't have a judge's signature? What is it then?
It's essentially administered by ICE or by DHS itself. And so, a judge has to sign off on a warrant for it to be valid to gain entry into a closed space.
ACLU has been putting out the idea that states are the front lines of freedom. And, so many people are the question I'm hearing a lot is, who's going to lead the resistance? Who is this person? And I think this idea that there isn't a person, there's not some charismatic figure, it is going to fall to local and state levels, maybe some of the most powerful places. But how? How can states be that kind of bulwark?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are a couple of ways that are really important to highlight, and it's important to underscore that, all of us through our elected representatives have control over this, some extent of control through our communications and engagement with our elected officials at the local and state and federal levels. As far as state level protections, it's really important to remember that some very hard-won civil rights laws are still on the books. Vermont has some of the strongest protections in the country. And so for anyone who is concerned that these executive orders can somehow magically override those protections, they really need to think twice. I saw an interesting case out of New York recently where New York's attorney general just reminded New York hospitals that complying with one of the executive orders seeking to end gender-affirming medical care for transgender people could violate state anti-discrimination laws. And Vermont has similar state law protections. As of today, they remain in effect. And so those are not just, Trump can say whatever he wants. It doesn't necessarily make it so. It's really important to remember that we have strong protections on the books. At the same time, we also have to be clear-eyed about the threats. We have a hostile federal government that is looking to dismantle those protections. And for all the progress we've made in recent years in Vermont, legislators can and do more to shore up our state level defenses. The ACLU has been working with elected leaders and our partners in Vermont on a plan that we've called the Firewall for Freedom. And that would enhance our existing state law protections to further safeguard things like reproductive liberty, bodily autonomy, strengthen privacy protections, and make Vermont a more just and equitable state. And I think the last couple of weeks just serve as a reminder, ample reminder, that our elected representatives need to act with some urgency on those initiatives. And people, again, people who are concerned can and should be in touch with their elected representatives and urge them to prioritize those kinds of protection. So that's one place where this plays out. I think another key thing at a time when the Trump administration is trying to scare communities and threatening to do profound harm to our state, we need Vermont leaders to push back. They need to push back against these bullying tactics and reassure Vermonters that they're going to defend our rights and assert our values. And I would say that we've seen that from Vermont's Attorney General. Charity Clark should be commended for joining the multi-state litigation to challenge the birthright citizenship order, for pushing back on threats towards so-called sanctuary jurisdictions. The state treasurer has created a task force to help track federal actions that could impact Vermont. But that's what we need more from our leaders. We need it from, I guess I would say, given the chaos and the confusion of the past couple of weeks, it's a little surprising the governor hasn't said anything about any of this, and don't think he should get a pass on that. And the press corps really should be asking him about it more, because Vermonters need to hear from, they need to hear consistently and clearly from our governor, from the General Assembly and other state leaders, that attacks and threats to our community members are not going to be tolerated. Vermonters need to hear that state leaders have our backs. And they have a right to demand that. They have a right to demand that their leaders will do everything in their power to defend the rights of all of us.
You mentioned the situation in New York, where a New York City hospital declined caring for a young trans patient, citing, I guess, an executive order that would supposedly, well, I'll let you phrase it so that I don't mash it up here. I want to hear about that, but also you mentioned that Vermont has laws that protect LGBTQ people and protect against sex discrimination. What should LGBTQ Vermonters know right now? What message do you have that would reassure them that their health care, their privacy, and their rights won't just be curtailed?
Well, it's what I'm saying. Vermont already has some of the strongest state-level protections in the country. Those are not simply wiped away by an executive order. The ACLU and other organizations, and this is something I want to return to, we are reviewing all of the executive orders and are going to review every federal action that comes down the pike, and we are going to challenge anything that is unconstitutional. We've already started to do that with some success, and you can expect a lot more of that. That is going to be really messy and complicated, and it's going to take time. And so, as scary and uncertain as this time is, I do want folks to just keep in mind that there are existing protections in place that remain in place, and that there are a lot of people, including at the ACLU, who are working to ensure that they remain in place, and that attacks on transgender youth and families, or immigrants, or anybody who's targeted by this administration are not going to go left unchallenged.
Can you give a concrete example of a state level protection and a federal edict or executive order that's been made recently? And what happens when those two collide?
Well, I think one example in the immigration context is we have a state fair and impartial policing policy that is designed to keep local police out of the deportation business. And the Trump administration has been threatening sanctuary states and sanctuary jurisdictions that they need to essentially do the bidding of the federal government, and the federal government somehow has a right to commandeer local police to do what they want. And that's just not true. And the Attorney General, Charity Clark, signed on to a letter with multiple other attorneys general to push back against that and to refute that claim. You know, the fact is our system of government affords a great deal of leeway and authority to the states, and there are real limits to what the federal government can do, just like there are real limits to what a president can do via executive order. An executive order does not override the U.S. Constitution, and that's a theme that we've already seen very prominently, and we're going to be returning to. And so, again, I would remind folks that our system of government includes, this is not the whole story, but in addition to the local activism that we need and the state level protections that we have and need to make stronger, there's also the judiciary and the legal strategy. And although this isn't the whole story, I mean, it may be obvious coming from the ACLU, but one of the things we need to do is to take this administration to court. And that's what we have done. The ACLU filed, I think, the third lawsuit against the Trump administration yesterday. We filed several lawsuits challenging executive orders related to immigrants' rights. And we've seen partners, including state's attorneys general, file similar legal challenges. That is going to have a big impact. And it shouldn't be overstated the significance of that, but it's a really important part of the overall strategy is the legal game.
How confident are you that our legal system will be up to the task of safeguarding civil liberties?
Well, I mean, again, I really want to emphasize it's not the whole strategy, and it never is, never has been, never will be. The courts are not the whole picture, but it's a critical part of our system of government. And in a time when you have an executive that is really trying to test the limits of constitutional authority and really trying to undermine our constitutional system of government, it's an especially important time to look to those courts to uphold the rule of law and to safeguard our constitutional rights. And so that's what we're doing. And I think within hours of the first executive orders, we were in court on the birthright citizenship order. And within hours, in a separate but parallel case, a federal judge declared that order was blatantly constitutional.
Unconstitutional.
Blatantly unconstitutional.
Yeah.
Like, how could you even bring this before me unconstitutional? And that's something that I think we're going to be seeing a lot of. And so that's not the whole story. I mean, they know this going in with some of these orders and some of these actions that they're likely to be struck down, and they're testing the limits. And so we have a responsibility to push back and ensure that those limits hold. And so I don't want to overstate that, but it's clearly a critical part of the strategy, and it's something that the ACLU has been doing for a very long time, for over 105 years. We're good at it, and we're going to be doing it a lot. It's not the only thing. There, again, we're looking to the states, we're looking to leadership of the states, and we're looking to everyday community members to play their part, both in the democratic process in terms of engagement with their elected representatives, but also in their communities in terms of looking out for their neighbors, looking out for one another.
Talk about the interplay between the legal system and grassroots organizing. And, you know, what may be going on, protests, what have you, in the community. Does it make a difference in the outcome of legal cases?
I think there's no question. Again, as part of the strategy, there's a legal strategy, there's a state level policy strategy, there's community organizing and local political engagement. And there's absolutely a place and a need for protest and for people to speak out. There's so many different ways for people to be engaged and to get involved. And that does matter. You know, courts don't exist in a vacuum. Legislators don't exist separate and apart from the communities that they come from. They see what people are doing and saying and concerned about, and they respond to it as human beings. So we need all of it.
Yeah. Attacks on DEI have become the justification for, well, it seems just about everything. Trump was blaming, you know, a plane crash on DEI. Can you kind of put that in a larger context. What is this about? Why is DEI become this, you know, for Trump, an epithet, and we are seeing it being rolled back and unraveled in many different spheres, from business to academic settings to other. What's this about?
I mean, I think it's a really convenient tool for the Trump administration and folks who want to roll back a whole host of civil rights protections that have been hard won over the past century plus, to roll those back. I mean, DEI is just a catch-all category, and I think at times it's just a cover for, you know, frankly, just racist initiatives to roll back civil rights protections. Other times it is like a convenient scapegoat for things that, like plane crashes. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever, a way to avoid responsibility for or to try to explain away much more complicated realities. And I just think it's really important for folks to remember that there is no, like, Donald Trump is not the arbiter of what is and is not DEI. What's behind a lot of diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives are our values of create, you know, places that want to create equitable and inclusive environments, which I think describes many places of work, many places in our communities. We need to remain committed to those values and to recognize some of the empty rhetoric and threats for what they are. And also to recognize that, again, behind a lot of it, it is a bigoted response to the civil rights gains of the past several decades, and that we do not have to accept that. People can and should stick up for what's right.
One of the things that's been most surprising, and I did not see this coming. Some of this stuff was predictable, but the takeover of, you know, basic federal functions, funding, Elon Musk becoming essentially this shadow president, going into the Treasury and shutting down USAID. What can be done to stop that? You know, it's being referred to as the broligarchy, this confluence of billionaires and leaders. And the billionaires obviously have tremendous financial stakes in how things are paid for, what is funded by the government. I mean, there's is essentially the dealer dealing himself in here.
Yeah, no question. No question. And there too, you can expect a lot of challenges, legal challenges that are going to be extremely complicated and take time to play out, political battles. And you know, again, looking to the courts, looking to the states, looking to everyday people to push back against that is going to remain critical throughout. I think it's really important, again, to recognize that this is all, to some extent, exactly what they said they were going to do. It's the, you know, the sowing of fear and confusion was expected, the moves towards oligarchy expected, and these are all explicit goals of the Trump administration. And it's important to remember that none of this is accidental, and some of it is because the administration actually has very little ability to accomplish anything through the U.S. Congress, where they have razor thin majorities. And so instead, they're testing the limits of our constitutional system. That system still remains in place, and the tools within it still remain in place. And we really have to be pulling on all of them and utilizing all of those levers to prevent further erosion of our systems and our laws and our values.
What's changed in your office? Are you getting a lot more calls? What do they tend to be about? What's the view from your end of the email and phone?
Yeah, well, you know, as I said, we're hearing from a lot of people with a lot of questions, a lot of concerns, very understandable, you know, a lot of fear and confusion and uncertainty right now, which, again, that's by design, that is intentional, and people should remember who's responsible for that. And so, you know, my colleagues and I are really trying to get out good information, really encouraging people to seek out quality sources and trusted sources of information like the ACLU, like VT Digger, Like our partners at Planned Parenthood and Migrant Justice and other organizations who you can trust for good information. And we're doing, getting Know Your Rights information out there, for example. And just trying to recognize that the fear people are feeling is real, but that it's going to take time. The lawsuits are already being filed. There are many, many more on the way. They're going to take time. The state level protections are in place. They haven't gone away, and we can still make them stronger. And in addition to calling on our leaders to speak out and speak up and to strengthen those protections, we all have roles to play in our community in sharing good information and in looking out for one another, knowing our rights. There's really no shortage of things that people can do. And we're just really trying to remind people of that and not, try to not let ourselves or others just be overwhelmed by the chaos, because again, that's an intentional part of their strategy, and we can't let them get away with that. Those who would seek to divide us or sow fear, we know how to get through this, and it's together. And that is what solidarity looks like. And that is what Vermont, the state of freedom and unity, that's what we are designed for. And I just have a lot of faith in the state and its people to come together to get through hard times. And this is certainly one of them.
Well, James Lyle, I want to thank you for joining us again on the Vermont Conversation.
Thanks so much, David. It was great speaking with you.
James Lyle is the executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Vermont. That does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Thanks so much for listening.